Chapter 52. Prebendary of St. Paul's were brought to be tried. Hooper was tried first for being married, though a priest, and for not believing in the Mass. He admitted both of these accusations, and said that the Mass was a wicked imposition. Then they tried Rogers, who said the same. Next morning the two were brought up to be sentenced, and then Rogers said that his poor wife, being a German woman and a stranger in the land, he hoped might be allowed to come to speak to him before he died. To this the inhuman gardener replied that she was not his wife. "Yea, but she is, my lord," apostrophe said Rogers, "and she hath been my wife these 18 years. Apostrophe his request was still refused, and they were both sent to Newgate, all those who stood in the streets to sell things, being ordered to put out their lights, that the people might not see them. But the people stood at their doors with candles in their hands, and prayed for them as they went by. Soon afterwards, Rogers was taken out of jail, to be burned in Smithfield, and, in the crowd as he went along, he saw his poor wife and his 10 children, of whom the youngest was a little baby. And so he was burnt to death. The next day, Hooper, who was to be burnt at Gloucester, was brought out to take his last journey, and was made to wear a hood over his face, that he might not be known by the people. But they did know him for all that, down in his own part of the country, and, when he came near Gloucester, they lined the road, making prayers and lamentations. His guards took him to a lodging, where he slept soundly all night. At 9 o'clock next morning, he was brought forth leaning on a staff, for he had taken cold in prison, and was infirm. The iron stake, and the iron chain which was to bind him to it, were fixed up near a great elm tree in a pleasant open place before the cathedral, where, on peaceful Sundays, he had been accustomed to preach and to pray, when he was Bishop of Gloucester. This tree, which had no leaves then, it being February, was filled with people, and the priests of Gloucester College were looking complacently on from a window, and there was a great concourse of spectators in every spot from which a glimpse of the dreadful sight could be beheld. When the old man kneeled down on the small platform at the foot of the stake, and prayed aloud, the nearest people were observed to be so attentive to his prayers, that they were ordered to stand farther back, for it did not suit the Romish Church to have those Protestant words heard. His prayers concluded, he went up to the stake, and was stripped to his shirt, and chained ready for the fire. One of his guards had such compassion on him that, to shorten his agonies, he tied some packets of gunpowder about him. Then they heaped up wood and straw and reeds, and set them all alight. But, unhappily, the wood was green and damp, and there was a wind blowing, that blew what flame there was, away. Thus, through 3/4 of an hour, the good old man was scorched and roasted and smoked, as the fire rose and sank, and all that time they saw him, as he burned, moving his lips in prayer, and beating his breast with one hand, even after the other was burned away, and had fallen off. Cranmer, Ridley, and Latimer were taken to Oxford to dispute with a commission of priests and doctors about the Mass. They were shamefully treated, and it is recorded that the Oxford scholars hissed and howled and groaned, and misconducted themselves in an anything but a scholarly way. The prisoners were taken back to jail, and afterwards tried in St. Mary's Church. They were all found guilty. On the 16th of the month of October, Ridley and Latimer were brought out to make another of the dreadful bonfires. The scene of the suffering of these two good Protestant men was in the city ditch, near Balliol College. On coming to the dreadful spot, they kissed the stakes, and then embraced each other. And then a learned doctor got up into a pulpit which was placed there, and preached a sermon from the text, "Though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing." Apostrophe When you think of the charity of burning men alive, you may imagine that this learned doctor had a rather brazen face. Ridley would have answered his sermon, when it came to an end, but was not allowed. When Latimer was stripped, it appeared that he had dressed himself under his other clothes, in a new shroud. And, as he stood in it before all the people, it was noted of him, and long remembered, that, whereas he had been stooping and feeble but a few minutes before, he now stood upright and handsome, in the knowledge that he was dying for a just and a great cause. Ridley's brother-in-law was there with bags of gunpowder, and when they were both chained up, he tied them round their bodies. Then, a light was thrown upon the pile to fire it. "Be of good comfort, Master Ridley," apostrophe said Latimer, "at that awful moment, and play the man. We shall this day light such a candle, by God's grace, in England, as I trust, shall never be put out." Apostrophe and then he was seen to make motions with his hands, as if he were washing them in the flames, and to stroke his aged face with them, and was heard to cry, "Father of heaven, receive my soul." He died quickly, but the fire, after having burned the legs of Ridley, sunk. There he lingered, chained to the iron post, and crying, "Oh, I cannot burn. Oh, for Christ's sake let the fire come unto me." And still, when his brother-in-law had heaped on more wood, he was heard through the blinding smoke, still dismally crying, "Oh, I cannot burn, I cannot burn." At last, the gunpowder caught fire, and ended his miseries. 5 days after this fearful scene, Gardiner went to his tremendous account before God, for the cruelties he had so much assisted in committing. Cranmer remained still alive and in prison. He was brought out again in February, for more examining and trying, by Bonner, Bishop of London. Another man of blood, who had succeeded to Gardiner's work, even in his lifetime, when Gardiner was tired of it. Cranmer was now degraded as a priest, and left for death. But, if the Queen hated anyone on earth, she hated him, and it was resolved that he should be ruined and disgraced to the utmost. There is no doubt that the Queen and her husband personally urged on these deeds, because they wrote to the council, urging them to be active in the kindling of the fearful fires. As Cranmer was known not to be a firm man, a plan was laid for surrounding him with artful people, and inducing him to recant to the unreformed religion. Deans and friars visited him, played at bowls with him, showed him various attentions, talked persuasively with him, gave him money for his prison comforts, and induced him to sign, I fear, as many as 6 recantations. But when, after all, he was taken out to be burnt, he was nobly true to his better self, and made a glorious end. After prayers and a sermon, Dr. Cole, the preacher of the day who had been one of the artful priests about Cranmer in prison, required him to make a public confession of his faith before the people. This, Cole did, expecting that he would declare himself a Roman Catholic. "I will make a profession of my faith," said Cranmer, "and with a good will too." Then, he arose before them all, and took from the sleeve of his robe a written prayer, and read it aloud. That done, he kneeled and said the Lord's Prayer, all the people joining, and then he arose again, and told them that he believed in the Bible, and that in what he had lately written, he had written what was not the truth, and that, because his right hand had signed those papers, he would burn his right hand first, when he came to the fire. As for the Pope, he did refuse him, and denounce him as the enemy of heaven. Hereupon the pious Dr. Cole cried out to the guards, to stop that heretic's mouth, and take him away. So they took him away, and chained him to the stake, where he hastily took off his own clothes to make ready for the flames. And he stood before the people with a bald head, and a white and flowing beard. He was so firm now, when the worst was come, that he again declared against his recantation, and was so impressive and so undismayed, that a certain lord, who was one of the directors of the execution, called out to the men to make haste. When the fire was lighted, Cranmer, true to his latest word, stretched out his right hand, and crying out, "This hand hath offended." Apostrophe apostrophe held it among the flames, until it blazed and burned away. His heart was found entire among his ashes, and he left at last a memorable name in English history. Cardinal Pole celebrated the day by saying his first mass, and next day he was made Archbishop of Canterbury in Cranmer's place. The Queen's husband, who was now mostly abroad in his own dominions, and generally made a coarse jest of her to his more familiar courtiers, was at war with France, and came over to seek the assistance of England. England was very unwilling to engage in the French war for his sake, but it happened that the King of France, at this very time, aided a descent upon the English coast. Hence, war was declared, greatly to Philip's satisfaction, and the Queen raised a sum of money with which to carry it on, by every unjustifiable means in her power. It met with no profitable return, for the French Duke of Guise surprised Calais, and the English sustained a complete defeat. The losses they met with in France greatly mortified the national pride, and the Queen never recovered the blow. There was a bad fever raging in England at this time, and I am glad to write that the Queen took it, and the hour of her death came. When I am dead, and my body is opened, apostrophe she said to those around her, "Ye shall find Calais written on my heart." Apostrophe I should have thought, if anything were written on it, they would have found the words Jane Grey, Hooper, Rogers, Ridley, Latimer, Cranmer, and 300 people burnt alive within 4 years of my wicked reign, including 60 women and 40 little children. But it is enough that their deaths were written in heaven. The Queen died on the 17th of November, 1558, after reigning not quite 5 years and a half, and in the 44th year of her age. Cardinal Pole died of the same fever next day. As Bloody Queen Mary, this woman has become famous, and as Bloody Queen Mary, she will ever be justly remembered with horror and detestation in Great Britain. Her memory has been held in such abhorrence that some writers have arisen in later years to take her part, and to show that she was, upon the whole, quite an amiable and cheerful sovereign. "By their fruits ye shall know them," apostrophe said our Savior. The stake and the fire were the fruits of this reign, and you will judge this queen by nothing else. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.